You're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's Wednesday, the 17th of June, 2009. And I'm your host, Herewood Fenton. Tonight, we have a number of really important stories to cover in the second half. We're going to be looking at the use of police powers in the form of tasering being exploited, and we're also going to be looking at the international situation with Iran, and we're going to be looking at a number of other related issues globally. But before I get into that part of the show, I have a guest who's a regular listener to the show, or at least has listened at least once, and his name is Stuart Edwards. And he actually is from Perth, and he's an expert in waste management. He has 18 years expertise in a variety of roles in the area of waste management, and I look forward to talking to Stuart about a variety of things. I mean, I've got some questions of my own which I'd really like to pose, and I'm very interested to hear whatever information that Stuart has to give us that might be of value. So at this point, I'd just like to say welcome to the show, Stuart. Are you there?
Thank you, Herewood. Yes, I'm here.
Excellent.
Look, thanks for having me on your show. I suppose it's, you know, one, it's a pleasure to have the opportunity to be able to discuss some of these things that we're going to be talking about, and also congratulations on a great show, and keep it up, all the great work that you obviously put into it, all the hard work, the effort.
It's great to have you aboard. And Stuart, I actually misplaced your bio material, which you sent me, because I'm having a bit of a crazy day and everything's going wrong. Now, I hope I got your basic details right of your background.
Yes.
And You contacted us through this show last week, and I'm just curious to know how long you've been listening and how you found out about our show.
Well, I've only listened a couple of times to your show, only recently.
Okay.
I guess just how I came across it was, you know, I've been on this truth-seeking mission, if you like, after, you know, 39 years of my life, realised that had been asleep for 39 years.
Right.
Pretty much woke up to what you know, the truth behind an enormous number of deceptions, which which all seem to fit into this bigger agenda for a globalized central government, which I literally stumbled across initially. I was actually trying to ascertain for myself how bad the subprime mortgage financial crisis was going to, how much worse it was going to get before, you know, things started to pick up.
Yes.
And so it was from there that I sort of, you know, followed the trail and kept coming back to the World Trade Center.
And yeah. So, it's a rabbit hole, isn't it? Once you start
exactly.
Thinking about what happened on September 11,
yep.
It really is a journey. There's no doubt about it. Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. I think, you know, a lot of people have had, you know, that I've talked to have had similar sort of stories to tell. It's interesting that whilst, you know, everybody takes their own path and uncovers these things just sort of, it's in some cases at random, that there's, you know, certain key aspects which I think are all the big you know, things that you don't sort of read about in the mainstream media, and those are the sort of points, I guess, of, you know, common ground that then, you know, from there we all sort of learn from each other in finding out, getting to the bottom of the truth, I guess. And look, I was, as I say, asleep for 39 years. I woke up last year, and when I did, I basically started writing a book. I wrote my first book about, you know, the journey, if you like, some of the subjects that that I discovered that were, you know, the real story behind them. And it sort of intersected my work in that, working in local government, I discovered the truth about climate change.
Okay, so you've come to question the orthodox dogma on anthropogenic, human-induced, CO2-induced climate change.
Now,
yes, indeed.
Yeah, before I go into the nitty-gritty of that, I'll just say that, you know, I was sort of evolved in the waste industry and evolved following the release of the Agenda 21 documents that, you know, I got behind it 100% on
right.
The objectives, the waste minimisation objectives. You know, I can even remember thinking, "Wow, Al Gore, what a champion for humanity!" You know, this guy should be the president of the U.S. And then,
okay.
Of course, that was so. That's where I was coming from, okay. And that if you would have told me 10 years ago that, you know, humans don't cause global warming or CO2 is not a toxic pollutant, I would have laughed.
It's it's sort of changes have occurred in the way you perceive things as a result of general studies and just learning about all the other things that are wrong, and you start to question. Yeah,
and I can run right through, because I'm pretty much up to speed with the truth on climate change. So here goes. Climate change is real. Okay, I think that's everybody's pretty much on the same page there. The truth about whether humans cause it or not, CO2.
Well, the climate changes. We can all agree the climate changes. It changes all the time. But yeah,
Human influence on that is absolutely minuscule compared to what we have been told. Now, CO2, we're told, is a toxic pollutant, and we're going to be taxed on it. CO2 is an essential component in the carbon cycle. Plants grow better with it. You have, you know, things for indoor greenhouses in the UK that add CO2 to make the plants grow better. It's really, when you look back at the, I guess, the background behind how we got to where we are today. And also, I guess the other point that I make as well is that I think that a common reason why there's a lot of friction, generally speaking, that a lot of people can't accept it is because people can easily misunderstand what you're saying. They take it that if you're not following the what we've been told, then you're for doing nothing for the environment, which is not the case. What we've got to do is address the real environmental problems that we're facing, things like arsenic in the water supply in Bangladesh and toxic chemicals being dumped in oceans. Real environmental disasters, if you like, that have been...
So far, I agree with everything you've said. I'm totally...
Right.
Totally on your wavelength with what you're saying, yeah. So,
okay.
And I think you'll...
So,
yes.
So, yeah, that's, you know, in terms of the background to how we got to where we're at today, it was engineered to happen. I mean, in the 60s, they decided that... I mean, I don't know if you've read the report from Iron Mountain, which is, highly contested... publication as to its, you know, whether it was a hoax or not, but
right.
One of the professors who actually was involved in it admitted that it was an authentic document. And,
now, what can you just elucidate that for our listeners? The report from Iron Mountain. What was that exactly?
The report from Iron Mountain, well, it's, as I say, if you Wikipedia it, it will right. tell you that it's claimed to be a hoax, but a professor who was actually involved in the, it was like a summit that was, they attribute it down to the Defense Department of the US that had commissioned the report, whether or not that's true. But anyway, they've got this professor who said, yes, it's a real report. And so these guys got together and looked at how, you know, ways that they could perpetuate themselves in power, and they decided that, you know, with their agenda for a global government, that they would not be able to necessarily remain in power. So they explored alternative ways of being able to maintain power. And in the absence, obviously, in it with a global government, that you'd have no opposing nations or whatever, a threat of war. So they needed to basically replace war as a way of, staying in power.
Well, now that's a little different to the Orwellian scenario, which actually has perpetual war as one of its essential ingredients, which, of course, you know, in George Orwell's vision, the world was divided between three superstates who were perpetually at war. And I tend to think, if anything, they'd like to move in that direction. And when I say they, I don't even know who I mean by they. But assuming that there are such shadowy figures as rulers of the world, that they of our world, that they would like to perhaps even have something similar to that. I don't know.
It's
very speculative.
I forget the other guy's name. Was it Chris, who you had on the other day, mentioned G. Edward Griffin's Creature from Jekyll Island?
Yes.
Now, in chapter 24 of that book, he's looked at the report from Iron Mountain, and at the end he said, policies designed to reduce consumption under the rubric of sustainable development are high on the political agenda. Real environmental health and pollution issues are either being swept under the carpet or by being created by the petrochemical pharmaceutical cartel.
Right.
The last chapter of this book proves that actually the elite regard the humans as the primary, as the Earth's primary contaminant. Now, if we just fast forward a little bit to 72 and the Club of Rome sort of ran from, going on from there, the Limits to Growth publication that they brought out, which brought really into modern day the term environmental sustainability. Now, their conclusion was basically that, you know, the current system would collapse in 50 years, and, you know, from that, the UN elevated them up into sort of top rank in their environmental think tank groups, as being the authority on such matters. Now, a couple of years later, they came out also with the Master Plan for Organic Sustainable Growth and World Development based on global allocation of finite resources and a new global economic system. Later on, we had a few years later, we had the commission, the Brundtland Commission, which was where the UN Secretary-General basically asked Mrs. Brundtland to form this commission focusing on the long-term environmental strategies for achieving sustainable development. And so members of the Brundtland Commission came from 21 nations. They worked for 3 years on a report which is today, you know, commonly known as the Brundtland Commission, and they produced a report called Our Common Future.
Okay, I've not heard of that one.
Okay. Well, that was sort of the precursor to the summit. The you know, it was a virtual copycat of the Club of Rome document that was created 20 years before that.
Right.
And it called for action in terms of a global conference, and that's what led to the UN Conference on Environment and Development, the Earth Summit, which was held in Rio in 92. Now, that included, you know, attendees from almost 180 countries, I think. And they all agreed to work towards this sustainable development. Now, from from there is basically where you get all the detailed specifics, you know, addressing climate change, biodiversity management, and the responsibilities and rights of individual nations. Now, that was the global plan of action, which was called commonly Agenda 21.
Okay. There's some really interesting facts in here, which it's a bit of a blur, possibly for our listeners. And I'd really like to get some of these things from you after the show so that we can provide links, because I always like to provide references to stuff we talk about. And you've referenced a few things here that I'm not personally familiar with. So I'll definitely get some links from you on that. But please continue.
Yeah, no worries. Now, a lot of people are aware of the Agenda 21 document, but not a lot of people are aware.
So can you just give a bit of background on what is the Agenda 21 document and who produced it?
Okay, it was produced by basically representatives from member countries who had, you know, they were, I guess, people who were up to speed with those things at the time. Were called together. They had this big conference in Rio de Janeiro in Brazil in 92, and this conference was basically to get together and say, okay, the Brundtland Commission and these previous reports have said, you know, oh, we're going to have the Iron Mountain said, you know, we need an alternative to war, so we need alternatives there. And then the Brundtland Commission basically said, look, we need a global conference to sort out everything. So they all got together, put their heads together, they came up with the what's known as the Agenda 21 document. Now that's you know, freely available on the web if anybody wants to have a look at it. One of the key things about that straight off the bat with that start, at the very start of that conference, the guy who was the United Nations Environment Programme Secretary, Maurice Strong, said that we are a species out of control. Population must be stabilised and rapidly. Current lifestyles and consumption patterns of the affluent middle class are not sustainable. Some of the unsustainable things he mentioned included fossil fuels, appliances, home and workplace air conditioning units, and even suburban housing. Now, he added, and this is, you know, you bear in mind where the United States is at today, he added, a shift is necessary which will require a strengthening of the multilateral system, including the UN. And he has since gone on record to add that the USA is the biggest threat to the environment. And then he said, isn't the only hope for the planet that the industrialized civilizations collapse? Isn't it our responsibility to bring that about? So, sustainable development, you know, as shown in the Agenda 21 document, is basically the driving force behind, you know, you hear Al Gore talk about the wrenching transformation that society needs to fix all the disasters, the catastrophes on an environmental scale that we've created. You know, a lot of them obviously are real, and but how many of those, one wonders, have been engineered to happen, you know.
Indeed.
Sustainable development basically jumps on the back of these real issues that we can see, you know, touch and smell, the smog, the water contamination, that sort of stuff, real pollution. But sustainable development is not about fixing those problems. It is a planned control grid which will combine socialist aspects such as government control of business activities and zoning controls over private property. And, of course, then you have the indoctrination into the collective groupthink through the educational systems.
Can I just give you a perspective on where I stand on some of these issues? I actually think that pretty much what you're saying is correct. However, I think the interpretation of the goals may be different. The way I interpret the behavior of the elite, who can basically make decisions and change the way we run society is that they quite often, I think, and this even applies to people who, it's not about a hereditary thing. It's not that they were like some chain that goes back thousands of years to Babylon, which I know, you know, some people talk about. Okay, I don't even know about that, so I can't speculate on it. But what I do know is this, is that the people who have power within, and who have risen to positions of power, and I'm talking about world business leaders, the Richard Bransons, the Bill Gates, the Rupert Murdochs, the Ted Turners. Now, these people have a view of humanity where they actually do start to see humanity as being a bit of a plague on the earth. But of course, they don't apply that to themselves, you see. They start to think of themselves as being an elite, which is actually like the caretakers of this planet. And they think that they're doing good works when they talk about reducing global population. And they always, and many of them actually do have humanitarian impulses. And because I remember recently at one of these closed meetings they had that some information leaked out where Bill Gates was trying to kind of argue for how we need to improve people's living conditions because he believes that by doing that, that their population will naturally stabilize. But it turned out that one of the main focus of this group, and it was reported quite a bit, it turned up on a few news sites like InfoWars, that they were this elite group of the world's, you know, richest people in met to discuss how to stabilize and you know, shrink the global population.
How to kill people.
Although they would never say that in so many words. I do believe that they believe that it's not about that. There's also the environmentalists who are in a deep belief system about humanity being bad. But I think that the position of the environmentalists who've come to believe that humanity is bad because we are destroying the environment are actually a little bit hoodwinked by the elite industrialists who've jumped on this environmentalism bandwagon. But when they say humanity, they're not really referring to themselves. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay.
I agree totally. You know, that the elite clearly do have this us and them mentality where they're, you know, not even 1% of the population, and the rest of us are just the useless eaters that they call us. If we just look at some of the things that have been listed under the United Nations Environment Programme, the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report, right? Some of the things that they've listed as unsustainable: grazing of livestock, including horses, goats, sheep, cows, disturbance of soil surface, fencing, pastures or paddocks, aquaculture, chemical fertilizers and herbicides, building materials, all roads, highways, railroads, plantations, fossil fuels, dams and reservoirs, power line construction, cemeteries and landfills, sewage and drain pipes, land use that serves human needs. And it's even got in there Judeo-Christian Islamic religions.
So hang on, you're saying that these, what you've just cited there, that list of things, is regarded as unsustainable. Can you just run through it again, just a little bit more slowly?
Grazing of livestock.
Okay, yeah.
Including horses, goats, sheep, cows. Disturbance of soil surface.
Right.
Fencing of pastures or paddocks. Agriculture and aquaculture, including modern farming methods, use of chemical fertilizers, herbicides, etc. Building materials, including bricks, mortar, steel, floor and wall tiles. All roads, highways and railroads. It's even got fish ponds here.
Now, who is this group? Who is this group who's put this document out?
This document was produced under the United Nations Environment Program Global Biodiversity Assessment Report, which calls for urgent action on these unsustainable things. Now, you know, when you look at the sustainable development, you know, it's sold to us as something which is going to help the planet. And ultimately, it is not about that. It's about seizing land from the people, eliminating private property, and basically knocking us back to the Stone Age. Now, you know, I don't know what your views are on this, but I mean, personally, my view is that, you know, mankind has always, you know, go back to the Stone Age, and, you know, he's always used the best available resources, using the best knowledge that was available at the time. And what the Agenda 21 authors have proposed, the very best is saying that we need to go back to the Stone Age. I mean, no soil disturbance and no land use that serves human needs. So that's almost saying, well, humans shouldn't be on the planet so we can save the planet. But, you know, historically, you know, what if the Stone Age man hadn't, you know, taken the same view? They would have said, oh, well, we won't have the Iron Age because it's not sustainable enough. Where would we be today? You know, and I think that's a key point here. But just going back to that, you know...
I totally follow you there. Look, we're just going to take a short break.
No worries.
And we'll be right back. Just pause here. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Okay, we're back with Truth News Radio, and we're currently talking to Stuart from Perth. And Stuart has a background in waste management, and he's done a lot of study about the current world situation and many aspects of the environmental, what do we call it, the environmental religion, the environmental
cult.
Political ideology, dogma. I mean, where I stand on some of these things, I was trying to articulate it there before. I think that what I try to shy away from is where we start to speculate too much about a diabolical plan by a supremely powerful elite, which then begins to become... It's sort of disempowering, and this is what I find about a lot of the discussion about New World Order and Illuminati type concepts, is that it becomes ultimately disempowering. And we need to be able to feel that we can move forwards. And as well as that, I actually do not believe that there is an all-powerful elite which has the degree of control that is attributed to them. And, you know, if you've probably come across people like David Icke, who propose this kind of sinister history of control that's hereditary, that's a bloodline. Okay, I choose not to go down that path, and I haven't seen any evidence that convinces me of that either. So, you know, if someone showed me some amazing evidence that really showed it, then I would change my mind. But
okay,
So far I haven't. What I see is a tendency in humanity, and it's repeated over and over again in history, to fall into these patterns where the collectivist mindset takes over. And we've got this kind of struggle, I think, in human history between an individualist progressive mindset and a collectivist kind of archaic mindset. And the two seem to be constantly, you know, one's in the lead and then the other one's in the lead. And I have a feeling that we are moving back to this collectivist mindset, and it does scare me, okay? Because when that happens, we see, it's just, whenever it happens, if you look at communist China and look at the ridiculous things that happened during the Chinese Cultural Revolution, I mean, you know, they declared grass was evil, you know, and they had to tear up grass.
Yeah.
You know, this kind of collectivist thinking leads to totally irrational beliefs. I mean, the Nazis, you know, believing that racial purity was of utmost importance, and that, you know, certain races were dangerous and impure, and they had to be exterminated. I mean, again, this is collectivist thinking, and I think collectivist thinking almost always leads to what we call fascism, what has become known as fascism and political extremism of a totalitarian nature. So, okay.
I mean, you don't want to get into it, that's fine, but look, I have done a lot of investigation on it, and I strongly believe there is this banking global elite, if you like. I mean, I've got a quote in front of me, David Rockefeller from his page 405 of his book Memoirs. For more than a century, ideological extremists at either end of the political spectrum have seized upon well-publicized incidents, such as my encounter with Castro, to attack the Rockefeller family for the inordinate influence they claim we wield over the American political and economic institutions. Some even believe that we are part of a secret cabal working against the best interests of the United States, characterizing my family and me as internationalists and of conspiring with others around the world to build a more integrated global political and economic structure, one world, if you will. If that's the charge, I'm guilty and I stand proud of it. I think that there's, you know, from what I've seen, that there is a clear, you know, evidence that you know, the banking elite, if you like, have been running the show for at least, the last couple of centuries. But anyway, you didn't want to get into that side of things.
Well,
I'm happy to send you some of the evidence that I've managed to uncover in my search.
Where I question it is not in these facts. Where I question it, I think, is... these people have been controlling things, and some of them do certainly control it in a hereditary manner to the best of their abilities, and they like to pass down the mantle of power from generation to generation.
Yeah.
But I think that we actually have the capacity to break the cycle, and I think there have been attempts to do this before that have come close to succeeding. I think that, and where I like to focus with this show is actually on what we can prove factually to basically undermine what is being set up as the kind of mechanism by which we will end up being oppressed. And so we question factually the statements that are made about anthropogenic global warming. We question factually the statements that are made about the Al-Qaeda and the terrorist threat. We question factually the pharmaceutical industry's claims about the efficacy of all the different drugs that they're forcing on us and on our children. We question the monetary system in terms of the way it's structured, which we believe, and we've got, you know, references for that, that there is a deception, and we've referred to films like Money is Debt on the show, which basically point out that there is some fundamental deception going on in the system. So we focus on these facts. Now, the question of the finger of blame and that there are people and there are wicked people, I don't dispute. We just have to. We have to continue to focus on what it is we can identify. And one of the questions I wanted to ask you, as someone with a background in waste management, is that I've been very curious to know what actually happens with our recycled waste, because I've heard a lot of hearsay about things such as recycled waste that's been separated into all its different, plastics, etc. Quite often it's just recombined and thrown into the same hole. And that is very important for people to understand if that sort of thing is going on, to understand that if that is true. And can you enlighten me about that? Because I'm very curious to know.
Yeah, sure. Let's just go back to the when falling out of the Agenda 21 was generally around the country. Most councils were given targets of reduce your amount of waste to landfill by 50%, go away and do it. And so local governments were left to their own devices, which is why now across the country you'll notice that, if you go and visit neighbours in another city, that they might have a completely different system to the one that you have. Now, that was basically because local governments were left to work it out for themselves, and so, they drew their own conclusions from those things. And so you have this differing, levels of service, and that's, in some cases, is good because obviously you can have you've got different issues in different places in terms of the logistics of providing those services. As a general rule, most councils have some sort of commingled type recycling system, whether that's two or three bins and usually other type services on top. Now, with those commingled type systems, I can run through the main materials if you like and talk about do they get recycled, etc. Now, let's look at aluminium cans. Steel cans are obviously high value. Now, what generally happens is you put your recycling in your recycling bin. It will go to a recycling sorting facility, for anybody that doesn't know. And generally these days they're automated, and they have a whole series of different conveyor belts and things that the material runs through. And it is quite fascinating to see for the first time. You'll have things like eddy current separators that will fire aluminium cans off of the end of the line, air classifiers and things like that that separate the plastics. And so those materials then get baled up and sold back into industry. Now, where things go wrong generally is here recently we had the recycling plant in Canningvale, one of the biggest facilities in the country, in fact, was burned. And so suddenly, Perth's recycling capacity has disappeared overnight until they find an alternative, because the other facilities don't have the capacity. You can have situations where the material doesn't get recycled. Those instances of that happening, I know that we made a particular stance with it when I was at the City of Melville, and we said, well, even if this plant breaks down and we can't access it, we're going to stockpile this material, and even if it means we have to double handle it, we'll do whatever we can to make sure that it recycles, so that we couldn't be accused of throwing all the recycling in the hole in the ground. And
they were keeping it stacked up somewhere, or
it was next to the old golf course, that we had a bit of land that for about 2 week period while it was unavailable, the recycling plant, we actually dumped all this material and covered it up with tarpaulin, etc. But inevitably in the process of, when the plant did come back up again and we had to double handle the material, that, we got, some of it got contaminated with dirt from the site, and so some of it inevitably went to the tip. Now, but we did what we could to, recover what we could.
Okay.
So those, you do get those instances happening. That could vary from, one council to another. Some councils might just make the decision that, if the recycling plant's not empty, not available, then we will, because, and they might look at it from a financial perspective that obviously double handling the material is very expensive. We just did it from the basis that, you know, we don't want to undermine or undo any all the good work that we've done in terms of, you know, we're out there promoting recycling. The last thing we want is one of our trucks seen at the landfill, you know, full of recycling. So,
right.
But back to the, you know, the how many times? I mean, we're talking in the 6 years I was at Melville. You know, that happened. It happened twice, but only once for a 2 week period. You know, once was. The other occasion was just on one occasion. That's in a 6 year period. So, and you know, when you look at how many truckloads you'd pick up,
right.
It would be into the thousands across in a year. So, you know, on a few occasions, it may happen. That's the reality of the thing. And of course, what tends to happen is, as soon as somebody sees a recycling truck at a landfill. Every man and his dog's there with the camera for the local paper. So
right,
it's,
yeah.
So, but
well, look, that's important to clarify that because I do think sometimes that these things get out of hand and you get gossip. You just get rumor, you know, and you know that's useless. I mean, we only want to know what is factual and substantiated. What I've noticed with our recycling that we have here in Sydney is that it seems to be incredibly. I would just say inefficient. We have several different companies. They seem to have their own, you know, logos. Trucks with different logos, and they come around on different days. They pick up different things, you know. So one day there'll be a truck going around just picking up the plastic. On another day there'll be a truck going around just picking up the newspapers, and there just seems to be an excessive amount of these trucks driving around because they drive. You'll see them all day long. Sometimes late at night, you know. I've seen the same truck come round and round and round all morning, and I wonder why they're doing it. It makes me think that they're basically filling in time. Excellent. Look, that's a really good roundup. Look, we're going to have to wind up the interview at this point. I've got some other material I've got to cover tonight.
Oh, okay. I wonder if any of it's would be related to, because I did actually follow up on a couple of those issues that came up on that last show in relation
right.
to the ECT.
Oh yeah, have you got some info there?
Yeah, I have.
Okay, just quickly tell us what you've discovered there.
Well, I was so concerned when I read that I looked at it was the Herald Sun that put out that. Article about the ECT on the children.
Yes.
And so I followed up with Professor Conti Filippini, who was the guy who was quoted as saying that, you know, they were disturbed and, you know, yeah, it's a good thing.
Yes, yes.
He actually got back to me and said that, you know, he wasn't aware that they had actually, until I forwarded the link to the Herald Sun site, he said he hadn't been aware of it and that he remembered them contacting him and that he had told Eleni, who was the journalist at the Herald Sun, he'd told her that he had no experience in ECT on children, and but he had some experience in adults where it had some beneficial effect. Now, I did try following up with Eleni at the Herald Sun. I've left her a message to contact me to sort of get her side of the story, but he absolutely, you know, has said that he certainly did not say that those, you know, 55, I think it was, children had been given ECT, you know.
That is, so now that's interesting. So the article was quoted...
Had quoted Professor Filippini, as being the bioethicist who said, you know, these children were disturbed.
But the data, the essential data that those children were actually electroshocked, that is confirmed. I mean, that really did occur.
Yeah, I did try and contact the mental health legal people that were quoted in the article as well. But they haven't got back to me yet. I was interested in knowing about this, you know, because obviously they've had reports of people saying that they've actually, you know, in effect been tortured. Now, the other, you know, just while I was on that track, if you like, I actually had a quick look just under the Citizens Committee on Human Rights in relation to the new Mental Health Act in WA.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the article that I saw prior to this had said, you know, oh, WA's, you know, going to outlaw ECT for children over 12 years old. And I said, oh, yeah, that sounds all right then. And so I had a look at this, you know, what's being proposed in WA, and it's actually worse.
Really?
It's actually, you know, it obviously is an area that needs some serious efforts and highlighting, I guess, of some of these issues. I mean, we've got involuntary commitment. There's no recourse for people who are accused of having a mental illness and detained against their will by law as involuntary patients. Now, they can basically, now they've changed, under this proposal that they've changed the actual legislation in WA, that they no longer, you know, currently, if they think somebody may be mentally ill, they have the power to refer them for an examination to make a determination. Now, what they're proposing is that anybody who is suspected, in other words, they say, oh, we think you might have a mental illness, 35 days against your will, before you even get the opportunity of an initial review.
This is in Western Australia. This is a Western Australian law.
In WA. This is the proposed new Mental Health Act. And in terms of, and it just gets worse, I mean, in terms of children, in terms of involuntary commitment, as I say, going back to that other comment that, yeah, they're going to outlaw it, you know, ECT on children over 12. But if a psychiatrist decides that a child should be made involuntary committed, then the child could be given mind-altering drugs, restrained and put in isolation, and if they're over 12, also given electroshock treatment, all without informed parental consent.
That's extraordinary.
And on top of that, they can also say, well, the psychiatrist says it's in the best interest of the child to have no contact with their parents. So they can basically take your kids away, lock them up in isolation, strap down to a bed somewhere, pump full of mind-altering drugs and given ECT without having any opportunity to stop it. Which is obviously, you know, is horrific, and you know, it amounts to, you know, it's almost child snatching, if you like, you know. And
look, it's something that we are going to continue to follow up, and I'm really thank you so much for doing that research, and I'll contact you to get the names of the people you've spoken to, and I will chase it up again myself.
Yeah.
Because we want to know more, and you know, if we can do something with this show to break open this story, you know, then we're making some progress. Look, the very idea.
Just on that, Harold. Yeah. Just if anybody wants to have a look at that, CCHR have a website.
The problem with CCHR, and I know they do some good things. The problem is they're run by Scientology.
And, oh, is that right?
Yeah. Now, this is often used to discredit them. I've found articles where it's been because journalists love to use that. You see, so they will discredit CCHR by the virtue of the fact that it's run by Scientology. And what I'm trying to do is, you know, emphasize to people that, you know, we're not connected to any kind of cult. We're not trying to indoctrinate you into some new belief system. We follow science, okay? We will take the scientific method as our guidelines. We're open to people with religious beliefs as well. We're not against that. It's just that when viewpoints can get discredited so easily, and to me it seems that Scientology sets themselves up to be discredited so easily, it makes me very suspicious of this organization, CCHR. They've done a film which I've watched, which is actually quite not too bad. It's a little bit overly melodramatic, but they did produce a film which I have seen. I've got a film which I'm going to be screening with We Are Change Sydney called Generation RX, which is not connected with that group, and it's looking at the issue of the drugging of children. It doesn't get into electroshock therapy, but it gets into Ritalin and the SSRIs and the over-prescription, especially to children. Look, it's a massive issue. Look, in terms of electroshock therapy for children of any age, the fact that they say they're going to outlaw it, why were they ever doing it in the first place? And,
exactly.
I mean, it certainly wouldn't be anywhere good enough for them to say, oh, we're now outlawing it. We want to know why they were doing it, because you're damaging a child's brain by doing it. So there is simply no... there is no excuse for doing it to children. And we have to be very firm about this as citizens of this supposed democracy to actually make sure that the people who are doing it have to be brought to account.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, that statement, I think, covers a lot of the issues that need tackling, that the criminals who are responsible need to be brought to account for their actions.
And
that's what's going to happen. I mean, as more people are alerted to these things, I just know, absolutely, these people are going to be accountable one day. And the sooner that happens, the better.
Absolutely.
Because we can get on with improving things.
Yeah, look, we're going to have to wrap it up at this point, Stuart. It's been excellent talking to you. And
yes,
look,
great talking to you, Jeff.
I will get in touch with you to get those references, including some of the things we talked about earlier about the environmental groups, the Agenda 21 and the report from Iron Mountain. So perhaps you could email me with some of that information.
We'll
have it all up on the show for sure.
Have you looked into the some of the UNFPA's work in terms of their depopulation work? I've got a good document on that I can send you as well. It's quite informative.
Thanks. And look, we may do more shows focused on this topic, in which case I'll bring you back in. Sometimes, you know, we like to do a show where we're really focused. I wasn't quite sure what you were coming on to talk about today, so we hadn't kind of prepared to discuss this particular issue. But now that I know more about your, like, research areas, we'll keep that in mind.
Yeah, sure. And look, there's a whole lot. I've been now, as I say, awake for a year, and I've covered a whole range of subjects. One of the ones I didn't cover was you were commenting about why it takes so long to fix a road. General comment that one of those issues is that, you know, and this is a general comment, not every council's like this, but in some organisations, you know, they'll say, we're going to build this. They put it in the budget, they build it, and then they don't think about maintenance costs. And so the thing deteriorates. It's usually a piece of infrastructure asset that deteriorates. And so the whole sort of cycle then, you know, the reactive maintenance cycle that starts happening. And that's why instead of having a planned, you know, routine inspection maintenance type program, the guys are constantly responding to calls and running, chasing their tails around, trying to fix potholes left, right and centre all over the place. That's just as a general thing. I mean, at Melville it was completely different. We had targets, you know, we'll pick your bin up within 24 hours. If we miss it, we'll repair your bin within 3 days. If it's broken, that sort of thing. And we worked to that and we made sure we achieved it. So not all places are like that, but that's just as a general comment. One of the issues that often I've seen in some places where they get into that reactive cycle. So that just, if that answers that question for you.
Excellent. Okay, well, look, it's been great talking.
Great talking to you too, Harold. As I say, I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about these things, and I've got a whole lot more things I'd love to spend some more time talking to you about. So anytime you want to discuss them, just give me a call.
We will reconnect. Thanks, Stuart. Good night.
No worries. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Something's happening, don't speak too soon. I told the boss off, I made my move. Got nowhere to go. Son of Sam, son of the shining path, the clouded night. The couple killed, each and every time. I'm not uncomfortable, feeling weird. Lonely lead options disappear, but I know what to do. Son of Sam, son of a doctor's touch, a nurse's love. Acting under orders from
with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free. Okay, we're back. Truth News is beaming out through the interstellar and intra-cybernautical, cybernetical, cyber-spatial pathways into your brain, into any receiving frequencies that wish to partake of us. And my brain's a little bit spaghettified tonight. Josh,
would you like some sauce with that?
Yeah, I'd bolognese will probably be about appropriate.
Yes. It's amazing. The show's really starting to beam out across the planet through these, as you said, cybernautical pipes. We're gaining listeners every day, and it's amazing some of the feedback we're getting. So thanks to all our listeners and the feedback we get. And, the news tips that people send in, it's always good. So if you've got some news, folks, remember to log on to truthnews.com.au and send us a post or leave us a comment.
Absolutely. And we had a listener on the show just before, which Stuart, who is from Western Australia, and he had some very interesting information. He had a lot of information, and we really couldn't fit everything he needed to say into the time available. So, huge thank you to Stuart there. And he actually did some research into the question of ECT, and he even contacted some of the people we were talking about last week.
Good's that?
Yeah, it's excellent. And we're gonna keep following up on that. To anyone else who's listening, if you would like to follow up on anything we say or even correct us, go right ahead. And if you can provide more information than we've been able to glean, we love you, basically, because that's what we want.
Look, and the name of the show being Truth News, you know, it's a very full-on name for us, and it puts a lot of pressure on us. And what I say is, you know, I don't know the whole truth. You don't know the whole truth. No one person can. And so it's up to the listeners to really, you know, correct us if there's any wrongs, or if they think they have, they can rebut us. It would always be good to hear from you. So it's a really important part of the process, as we're all learning all the time.
Yeah, and, you know, righting wrongs is kind of what we're trying to do. So if you can right our wrongs, even better. You know, speaking of righting wrongs, we've got a fair bit of news to cover. I'm just a bit fragmented today. I've been having a few difficulties with my microphone stand. During the previous session, my mic kept dropping slowly, and every time I tried to adjust it, it would make a noise, so I was trying to stop doing that. But it kept slowly sinking, and I was kind of leaning down further and further as I was talking.
Nice.
Strange phenomenon. Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it. Anyway, hopefully that's over. So where are we? Normally I have a whole list of things to talk about. I'm a little bit behind the eight ball tonight. We really want to talk about the tasering incident because it's kind of like that's our meat and potatoes. You know, injustice is where we, you know, we jump right in there. And there's a tasering incident and a tasering story that was huge on the news on the weekend. I don't know if you caught it, Josh, but it was on the news radio quite a lot because the government announced, this is the state government of New South Wales, announced that they were going ahead to issue thousands and thousands of taser weapons to all frontline police. And it was...
No, that's right. It's thousands. It's literally thousands and thousands of taser guns getting ordered.
It's like just a party time for tasers. And they all said, look, we've checked it out. It's totally safe. We've done all the studies. Everything's fine, folks. Then suddenly on the heels of that comes this story of a man who was just shot from behind, walking down the street. He was a little bit jolly. You know, he was probably a little bit drunk. Okay. But he wasn't actually being violent. This is very important. He was just walking on the street. And you can see in the surveillance video, because the surveillance video picked it all up, and his lawyers...
Sorry.
You've seen it, haven't you, Josh? You've seen the
I've seen the footage. Yeah. This guy is a big, jubbly guy, you know.
Yes.
So he's probably a little bit drunk, and he's running, sort of jogging down the road, a little bit jolly, and the cop just pulls out. This guy is not being violent. He's just a jovial guy, and the cop shoots him in the back... with a taser. You see this guy spinning around and thrown on the ground. Is, you know, it's like the cop just doesn't stop.
What's the deal here?
You know, what is the deal? And before a couple of months before that, the government was saying, right, we're going to roll out. It wasn't a month. It was about a week before that. Like you said, you know, we're going to roll out literally thousands of these things to every police officer on the beat, and because they've had all the proper training now, and we're all ready to go.
Look, I mean, I just like to say and make it very clear that I don't think that the taser as a tool, call it a tool, is in itself wicked, and I do think there may be good reason to have it to. Prevent violence, and this is what they say it's for. And when they tell you that it's being brought in, the only scenario that they ever picture for you is one where there is someone out of control. Usually what they say, you know, it's going to be someone on drugs coming down off crystal meth, violent, either to themselves or to someone else, maybe wielding a knife, you know, and like a wild animal. And you think to yourself, yes, If a human being is behaving like a wild animal and is threatening other people, it's humane to take him out with a dart, because otherwise you're going to have to shoot him with a real bullet, okay? So it sounds very humane, doesn't it? If that was the only considered use, I would agree, but it's not, folks. They want to use it for a whole bunch of other stuff, and they don't admit it. And this is what makes me so angry, is they don't admit what they're really going to use it for. It's called pain compliance. And if you Google pain compliance, you will find out that it has already been discussed that this is what they will be used for. But they don't tell you that.
Absolutely. It's about, that's exactly right. It's about pain compliance. And you know, I mean, like you said, there is no real, you know, it's not, the tasers are not evil. It's not like that's a, it's how they're being rolled out and used. I mean, I just don't understand why there's a monopoly on violence. Why can't I have the right to defend myself? You know, it's illegal for, you know, if it's illegal for me to have it, it should be illegal for the police to have it, because they're just another gang. And I mean, that's where I really stand up for my own civil rights, is to say I should be allowed to defend myself on the streets, or have the right to, because police, let's just face it, they're very rarely on the scene when a crime happens. They're usually there to take notes afterwards. And
they'd be a bit less keen on whipping it out and shooting you if they thought you might have one.
Now, the other interesting thing I find about this incident of this guy being tasered is that the camera inside the taser gun wasn't working.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, this is really bad, okay? Because this is supposedly the protection system.
That's the protection system. That's right.
That protects your civil rights, the fact that they've put a camera in the gun. I mean, it's ludicrous, though, on its face, isn't it? How is putting a camera in the gun going to ensure that it's going to protect your civil rights? I mean, it all depends on where that camera feed is stored and whether it's saved or not. I mean, I'm sure the gun can't itself store an endless amount of footage.
No. And, you know, I mean, cameras, let's just face it, cameras don't stop anything. If cameras did stop anything, then we wouldn't have any, you know, bank robberies anymore, because banks have cameras everywhere, you know. Yeah. I mean, they literally don't do anything.
And of course, police.
And then when they all of a sudden don't work, you know, it's not a safeguard at all. It's an absolute ludicrous situation. And basically, what's happening here
then
is
why
we're,
should
we're
you
getting,
even need to put it? The idea that you're putting a safeguard in it is ridiculous in itself. I mean, it's ludicrous, because here you're giving police this thing, right? And you're encouraging them. They've been told they can use it in all these different ways. And one of the ways that they can use it is to basically make people do what they want. Then they say they're going to put a camera in it to protect people's rights. It's ridiculous. It's contradictory.
No, that's right. It is contradictory, yeah.
I mean, sorry. Yeah, continue. Sorry.
It's very important that people don't get bamboozled with the whole, ooh, they... You know, someone's got to save us. Someone's got to look out for us. You know, it's about taking a little bit of responsibility for yourself, and you know, not giving all the power to a few. And honestly, that a lot of the people that go into the police force are genuinely good people. I'm not saying that there's you know, every cop's bad and that will use this badly, but you know, it's, even if there is someone out there that has like the slightest of heart conditions or something like that, and they taser them, their heart just won't take it. I mean, there's hundreds of thousands of volts going through these people. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't matter if you're good cop or bad cop, it's just not a safe tool. And you know, yeah, neither's a bullet. Absolutely. But the thing is, that's how they're advertising it. They're advertising it as this safe cure-all tool, and it'll, you know, save the hard-working boys in blue, which, you know, I'm sure it will if there's some, you know, ICE addict running at you with a knife. Absolutely, you know, they need something to stop these sort of people. But it's just a general rollout of these extremely painful and volatile tools to a bunch of thugs really isn't a good idea. Yeah,
it is very far from a good idea. And I just want to give our audience the titles of these articles. Just keep talking there while I hunt this out.
Well, the other thing that happened, and it was pretty mainstream news last week, that a 70-year-old woman grandmother got tasered after speeding, and she was saying, "Well, no, I'm not going to pay the speeding fine. I'm going to get right back in my car. I'm a grandmother. You know, I was only going 10Ks over the limit. And the guy said, put your hands up, put your hands up, and pushes her onto the car. The grandma said, excuse me, no, I'm getting in my car. You're scaring me. And the guy just pulls out this taser and slams her with hundreds of thousands of votes. This little old lady. And there's this big, you know, cop just so high on power. And this is the sort of push of powers. And when you give police these non-lethal weapons, which can easily be deployed without much of a second thought, it's really important. And then when you get this legal precedent set by the Supreme Court in the states to say, well, it's not only a pain compliance tool now, it's also a it's not just a, you know, to suppress to crush violence or to, you know, seize someone. It's also a torture method to gain access to information.
Look, they even claimed in one case that it actually saved someone's life because it started his heart. You heard that one?
Look, no.
You know what they'll claim next? They'll tie it into electroshock therapy, and they'll say it, you know, it fixed someone's mental problem because of the electric shock to the brain, you know.
Yeah.
Got a dart in the head and suddenly he's better. Look, a few titles I just want to run past you here. The original article, which was published on the weekend, all frontline New South Wales police to get tasers. Now, we'll put links to all this on the site. I just want to point out a couple of really important issues here. Firstly, here's an example of the total double standard, okay? This is a story from earlier this year.
Mm.
I'm having a little trouble with my positioning of things today. I'm trying to keep close to the microphone as well as read the screen, and it's actually a little bit too far away from me to do that. That's why I'm... that's better. Okay. It helps if you explain while you're doing it. Okay. Here, I've moved it. Now, the police seized 10 tasers during a search of a Sydney home yesterday. This was January 27, 2008, actually 2008. At 1 a.m, officers were called to the intersection of Stanley and Crown Streets after reports of a taser assault. A 26-year-old Ashbury man was taken to hospital. A man was charged with 10 counts of possession of a prohibited weapon and one count of assault occasioning actual bodily harm. He was refused police bail. Two other men were each charged with assault occasioning actual bodily harm. Okay, think about it. They used a taser on someone and they were charged with assault. The police have never been charged with assault for using a taser. Even when it's been proven that they used it without reason, even when the person hasn't been violent, the police have never been charged with assault. When a citizen uses it, it's immediately assault. And I guarantee you those people would have been convicted of assault because it is assault by any reasonable standard. But the police never get charged with assault.
No, that's right. There's this immunity there. So, well, you know, a citizen using a taser, instant assault charges. A policeman using it, nothing's ever heard of it. It's moved on, you know. And there should be assault charges. I mean, someone tases you, should charge them, absolutely. You're absolutely correct. And this is...
Well, I mean, if a policeman punches you in the face, you can charge them with assault. You can, okay? This is why I think the taser is more sinister and really worrying, even though you could argue that it's just another example of police, you know, misuse of power, no different to a police hitting you with his truncheon, you know, or smacking you in the face, right? Mm. True, I agree with that, you know. However, that because the taser is this scientific thing, you know, it's like it's been specially designed, that the police can seem to get
away
with
it. Got an ergonomic handle.
Yeah, yeah. And the police can get away with using it and they never seem to get prosecuted for it. This is 10 times worse than merely being punched in the face, because they can use this with abandon. They can just keep on shocking people and they can do it over and over again. The guy in the video that we talked about earlier, he was shocked twice. The second one, totally unnecessary, because he was on the ground immobilized. His legs were twitching. It's revolting. Yeah. And there were all these people standing around watching it, weren't there, in the video? And there was a guy, there was a guy who gets out his camera phone and starts filming it. You can see that in the video.
While blocking our view.
Yes.
It was kind of annoying. Yeah, it was like, move out of the way.
Yeah, yeah. Look, some other stories that have just recently been posted. We have a forum thread on this at 9/11 Oz, and another story that's just been posted today about deaths. Now, it says here, there have been a second taser death in 6 months. Okay, this is an Australian story. Police and health officials will be investigated over the death of a North Queensland man yesterday after he was repeatedly shot with a taser, the second person in Australia to die this year while being restrained with a controversial weapon. Just hours after being released from the Townsville Hospital, where he had been taken by police for a mental health assessment, the 39-year-old was shot at least three times with a 50,000-volt stun gun. He was tasered as he confronted two junior officers called to a unit after he allegedly assaulted a woman, smashed property. Okay. Well, we don't need to go into the whole story. Clearly, you know, the police have a hard job. I don't begrudge them that. I don't deny that it's difficult. They do.
No, it's difficult, a minority having a monopoly on, you know, violence. And that's absolutely, it's a difficult job.
But when you see people dying as a result of being of this weapon being used, and when you see clear examples of it being used against people who are not actually violent, simply non-compliant, one of the uses that has been listed for the taser is to deal with people who are protesting. Because passive resistance, okay, and this is very important for our listeners to understand if you are an activist of any kind. When police are armed with tasers, passive resistance is off the table, folks. You're not going to lie down in front of bulldozers or whatever it is that you're protesting against and think that you can just do that anymore. When the police are armed with tasers, they will shock you and they will keep shocking you until you get up and do what they want. You won't be able to just lie down anymore, okay? So that's one of the goal. One of the uses is to stop passive resistance.
Yeah, that's right. It's absolutely absurd, you know. So even though you can't even get up when you're being shocked with millions of volts.
Did you know that the taser has what's called a drive stun mode? So I didn't even know that till I was researching it again recently. Tasers have a switch on them. You can put them into like paralyze mode, but you can also put them into drive stun mode. And that is what they use when they want to get people to do what they're told. I think it's slightly less voltage. So you don't actually become totally incapacitated.
God, how scientific.
Yeah, yeah, you just get, it's just horribly painful.
You know, geez, how technical.
Yeah.
They just lower the voltage and...
Yeah, we see once the dart is embedded in you, see, it's got this wire, right? So the dart is embedded in you and then they can adjust, and it's stuck into you, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
you are at their mercy then. They can just keep shocking you with it, right? Why is it even being debated? It's not even, it's so clearly wrong. And that's why there never has been a proper debate, because they know that you can't debate it because it's so clearly wrong. So they try to rush it through, and then they have an ombudsman report that came out after they'd already issued the guns. And the ombudsman report says, well, we should not rush ahead with this.
No, what we're facing here is basically a corporation is lobbying the government massively. Because as soon as this gets passed through, it's taxpayer-funded, massive rollout of these devices, which are, you know, basically a really nice big checkbook for the Taser Incorporated. And so, you know, you have a hard job ahead of you trying to stop these things. That's why it's also incremental. They bide their time. You know, this company goes, right, doesn't matter, it'll take 2 years, but we'll get a huge sale after that, you know. And so it's always important to stay on top of this. And this is the way they manipulate people is by really striking on the fears of people by saying, you know, the streets are scary, the you know, all the cops need these. And, you know, like you said earlier, Harold, the police do have a very hard job, and I'm not saying they don't, but... Yeah,
I think you hit it straight on, right on the nose there.